everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown. Here on Inside the Ropes, we are covering the July 6th episode of Raw is War. Lots to talk about here in this episode.
There's so much.
My name's Kenny. I'm with Sondra. Hi, Sondra. Is 1998 mental? I think so.
Yeah. Yep. 1998 is definitely something. It is a thing that's happening. I don't know why it's happening. I don't know why any of it is happening, but it's happening.
It's a real thing. So if you're watching along with us, 267 on the network?
Yep, 267, July 6, 1998.
267. So let's just get straight into it.
I think we might as well.
So we opened the show with, last week, and obviously The Undertaker's pissed. He ends up kind of helping Steve Austin. Well, apparently helped Steve Austin win, even though he kind of won by himself. So The Undertaker comes out to the ring.
Even though he should have lost because...
Exactly.
Whatever. I mean, are we talking about Raw or are we talking about... Yeah, on Raw, Steve Austin basically
on
won
Raw.
By himself. I mean,
yes.
Undertaker just basically appeared. Like, it's not you, like he...
You need to let go of King of the Ring.
I'm annoyed, but I will try to let it go.
So we open the show with The Undertaker coming out. He's super pissed off. He's got his purple lighting, but also random fireworks he seems to have now.
I think they're angry fireworks. Maybe when the Undertaker... Well, maybe did he light the fireworks with the lightning? Because that would make sense.
That could be it. So he comes out, he just gets in the microphone, he says he wants Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he wants the WWF title, and he wants it tonight.
I like short and to the point Undertaker so much more than I like Undertaker who goes on about souls and digging holes for an hour and takes forever to do everything. This Undertaker was like, fuck you, I want the title.
What I will say is, even if somebody doesn't like The Undertaker, I think his facial expressions in this episode were fucking phenomenal. Like,
I think they were.
Like, there's one point where he looks at Vince later on and I thought he was going to kill him with eyes.
Yes. Well, I think that's kind of the Undertaker's default look, so that does help him out. But, I mean, yes, his facial expressions looked very intense on this episode. That is true.
So he comes out, he wants the title tonight. We immediately go backstage to Michael Cole just running through the arena trying to find Steve Austin.
I love that he's just opening random doors and, like, Steve Austin just, like, pops out of one of them. And he's like, I can't be bothered with you.
Now, just to keep count, in the last 4 months, there's been, like, 6 Steve Austin t-shirts that I would wear in regular life.
Yes.
Let's just compare that to today, just so we're there.
I mean, there are certain people that have about a bazillion t-shirts. The New Day ones I would totally wear in life, because those are fun.
They are. I mean, but Austin just, like, he's like a pinnacle of t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
He just... See, he eventually comes out. He's not going to give his answer to Michael Cole. Michael Cole tries running after him like a scalded lover. But Austin just isn't doing it. So we get this rare glimpse of Austin walking to Gorilla and walking out. He comes out. Fans are going fucking mental. The glass breaks. Undertaker is not fazed by Steve Austin. He comes out. Austin's basically going to give him the impromptu title match, according to Jim Ross. But before Steve Austin can say anything, Vince McMahon appears, and he reminds them both that he's the owner of the WWF, and he will not let the inmates run the asylum.
Seems and like a little he dig says at he WCW decides, there.
There you go. He does say, though, he says, you know, I will not allow you guys to decide who gets the title shot. I run the WWF. I decide who gets the title shots. But he says, you know, if you guys want to tear each other apart, the next pay-per-view is called Fully Loaded, and you're going to be able to tear each other apart, but not in the way you would think, because you're going to be teaming up in a tag team match against Kane and Mankind. What did you make of the announcement of Kane and Mankind teaming up to face Austin and The Undertaker?
I mean, why? Just why? And why did it take Vince McMahon so fucking long to say it? Like, Vince is just out here rambling on and on and on and on and on, and definitely Stephanie gets this from him, because he's just like, I'm in charge, and I run the World Wrestling Federation, and well, yeah, whether you like it or not, you'll have a chance to do this, whether you like it or not, and you're going to be a tag team, whether you like it or not. He just kept saying, whether you like it or not. I was like, get to the point, please.
I don't know, it kind of worked for me. I thought Vince was good here, because he's the owner and just does what he wants. But he's more effective than Stephanie, which for me makes it work better.
He's more effective than Stephanie. It's just this was the Vince McMahon where he veers too much to being like Stephanie, and I didn't enjoy him in this episode.
But he goes on to say that, you know, Vince is going to name Steve Austin's number one contender tonight. He's going to name it in the ring. And then he says, before I go, let me remind you, Steve Austin, about how I feel about you being the WWE champion. And then just gives him the bird.
Well, first he gives salutes him.
He and salutes then him and then gives him the Vince McMahon bird, which is very different from the regular bird. I'm doing it right now, which doesn't make any sense
on
radio.
With the finger out thing?
With the index and finger beside the pinky, kind of like half up. The middle one, it's a weird middle finger, but it's there. And Austin's just enraged. He's like running after Steve Austin. Undertaker's just kind of like, cool, got what I wanted. All good.
I mean, Undertaker hasn't really gotten what he wanted because Vince McMahon says that he's going to name a contender, but he hasn't named a contender. Like, this was basically all just an announcement for an announcement. I mean, he did announce the tag team thing, which is fine. And doesn't make sense. I mean, it's just Vince being a dick and making them a tag team, right? But I don't know. It fell a little flat for me. I thought the part where Undertaker was shortened to the point was good. I thought Austin coming out to confront the Undertaker was good. But as soon as Vince came out, I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for me. I think Vince is far more effective than Stephanie. I think because the program with Austin McMahon is more effective, it works better for me. Like with Stephanie, she's never really in an effective program with somebody. So yeah. It's always feels a bit like long-winded, but I think because Austin and Vince I thought the payoff was good with McMahon doing the bird to Austin. That worked for me. So, overall, I enjoyed it. So then we head into Brawl for All, the continuation of Brawl for All. We have Savio Vega versus Bracus, Sandra.
I'm so excited for Bracus. Like, I was so excited to see Bracus because I remember his vignettes from so long ago. And Bracus was terrible here. I mean, Savio Vega basically kicks the shit out of Bracus. But it's the Brawl for All, Kenny. The Brawl for All is such a bad idea for so many reasons. Like, I don't think I fully articulated all of the reasons why it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea because it just highlights the fact that wrestling is not real, right? Like, if you have people actually just beating the shit out of each other, then that, like, what else are you doing on the rest of the show? And I mean, we all know that wrestling's scripted and that's fine, but it's just when you throw such a drastic light on it and such a drastic comparison, it's a problem. Brawl for All is also seemingly not a great idea because people's lips keep getting busted open and their noses keep breaking and getting busted open. Like, why would you put your wrestlers in a tournament of fighting when, like, you're still expecting them to wrestle every day? Like, there's a reason that fighters have training camps and fight once and then take time before it's not like they're fighting every single night because you're going to injure your wrestlers. You're going to injure your fighters. Like, injuries happen in shoot fights. So it just seems really irresponsible of WWF to do this when they're basically just saying, like, yep, we're cool with you guys getting injured. That's totally fine with us. Like,
I mean, if we thought Vince McMahon was long-winded, the Brawl for All is like, it's like life in prison.
Basically,
it's so long and it never goes in. Bracus comes out, fights Savio Vega. Savio Vega wins. I don't know who cares.
I mean, I care because
you're the only solitary person. And like, I love that you've just complained about Vince McMahon being long-winded, and then Bracus versus Savio fucking Vega in a three-round match. You don't have any complaints about that being long-winded. I mean. And
at least all the rounds are only 60 seconds. Kenny, were you not paying attention to the rules?
The amount that Vince went three times. Oh my god. Okay.
I mean, the graphic for Brawl for All is terrible. Like, it's in this really awful font, and there's no space between Brawl and Four and All, so it just says Brawl for All.
It's so terrible.
Like, it's the worst thing.
At least the opening segment built to something. What is this building to? Injuries?
Yes, it's building to... No, it's the worst idea ever. Like, it is terrible. Actually, you know, remember when TNA did their grand championship thing and it was a terrible idea? At least that was a better idea because it was booked and it was scripted, right?
Like, remember when they did the reverse battle royal?
I mean, I don't, but you've told me about it.
Where you had to try... The aim was to try and get in the ring?
Yes, which sounds horrendous and like something I really do need to watch at some point.
$50 podcast, TNA's worst matches, just saying.
Somebody seriously pledged that because that sounds like a lot of fun. But at least like when TNA did it, they booked some stories within the Grand Championship thing because they had the round system and like it wasn't a tournament. It was like, it was a championship, but they still did the rounds thing and it didn't really work out because when you're going to see a pro wrestling show, you want to go see a pro wrestling show, not a fight. But at least with TNA, like they weren't doing actual fighting and there was a scripted outcome and you weren't just so prone to injury and they could build stories with it. With this, it's just, what even is the point? Like, it's a brawl for all, right? Like, but what is it for? Like, what is all?
Is it to kill my soul, maybe?
Maybe.
Okay, so we've spent enough time on Bracus and Savio Vega. I mean, we just don't need to go any further. Bracus's one appearance on Raw as a wrestler is this.
Poor Bracus.
But Ken Shamrock's on a roll, Sondra. He became the King of the Ring. He became the King of Kings last week. Now he's facing off against Jeff Jarrett, who has Tennessee Lee in his corner. Edge is in the crowd watching.
One of the J's on Jeff Jarrett's pyro, like, refused to light up right away because even the J is bored by Jeff Jarrett without his horse.
So we start the match, and Shamrock is in control, as always. And as Shamrock is continuing to be in control, a big fat black man appears. It is King Mabel. King Mabel!
King Mabel to attack
Ken Shamrock for the disqualification. King Mabel.
Kenny, when King Mabel appeared, I was concerned for your well-being. Are you okay right now?
I mean, here's what I will say. I've lost sleep. It's broken up relationships. But I still got up. Don't watch King of the Ring 95 more than once. I mean, I just can't. King Mabel. It's like, imagine, Sondra, that you had like a really bad home invasion where a man like hit you in the face and you were like permanently disfigured. And then like later on, 10 years later, you've just got over it and you've had like a family and children and your son's graduating from college. And as your son's about to graduate, and you're like, oh, my life's become so good. And my son's graduating. He's great. And then right beside him, they just have the man who attacked you and permanently disfigured you give your son his plaque. That's what this was.
I mean, obviously you have some lasting scars from King of the Ring 95, and I understand that. And
you would, you know, too.
I've never watched King of the Ring 95, and I do not plan to watch King of the Ring 95.
Four Savio Vega matches.
Yes.
Three Mabel matches. Three.
Which is why, like, I figured if you had seen King Mabel come back on an episode of Retro Raw, I would be concerned because I know that that brings back traumatic memories for you. Seeing King Mabel come back on an episode of Retro Raw immediately after Savio Vega in the Brawl for All, I was like, oh no, he's not going to be okay.
I actually texted you
to check on you and your mental health.
I was barely able to get through. And, you know, I was like, I like the opening segment. I'm all chuffed. I'm all happy. And then I get Bracus and Savio and I go, okay, you've tested me there, but I'm okay. I'm getting Ken Shamrock, bit of Jeff Jarrett, I'm all good. And then you bring King fucking Mabel in. Not okay, Sondra. Not okay. King Mabel splashes Shamrock and then leaves. There you go.
And I don't really think Jeff Jarrett does anything about that. This match doesn't even end, does it?
It's a DQ because Mabel attacked Shamrock.
Because Mabel ruined our lives, right. So, I mean, not that Ken Shamrock versus Jeff Jarrett was like the most scintillating of matches that I was like, ooh, this is something I really need to see a conclusion to. But yeah, so that basically happens. And Ken Shamrock and his crazy eyes challenge Mabel to a fight tonight.
Michael Cole gives sympathies to Ken Shamrock.
Was Southern Justice like literally just on one episode of Raw? Because I'm totally okay with that.
Do not get too comfortable.
Damn it.
Michael Cole gives his sympathies to Ken Shamrock, who wants Mabel tonight. So we're getting a Mabel match, Sondra.
Get excited. I was curious, because Mabel's Viscera, right?
Later on, he becomes Viscera, yeah.
Right, so I saw him when we watched Royal Rumble 2000, and I thought, he is not very good. And
not better here.
I did not have high hopes for him in 1998.
We'll get to him. But before that, we get a match that actually...
At least he was clothed here.
Thank fuck. But, you know, this actually seemed like quite a fun match. Vader versus Bradshaw. Two kind of like fucking, you know, guys who are just going to beat the shit out of each other. That could be cool. So they're fighting. They're going at it. The fans fucking love Vader. They love him.
Because Vader's great. I mean, I don't give a fuck about Bradshaw, but I wanted Vader to kill him.
I've got five matches of Vader's to watch for this week's Power Slam podcast, so I'm excited. A lot of Vader in my life.
I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. So we get Vader and Bradshaw. It's actually quite good. It's actually quite fun. They're just beating the crap out of each other. But before he can really get anywhere, Kane and Mankind just run down and kill Vader and Bradshaw because they're Kane and Mankind, and they're wonderful, and they should kill whoever they like.
But why? Like, why are they attacking Vader and Bradshaw?
Because they're angry, Sondra. Because they're angry. Because they think they should be the number one contender for the WWF Championship. And they don't care about Vader versus Bradshaw.
But it's not like Vader or Bradshaw is the number one contender for anything. I just don't know what they're looking to accomplish.
Let me take you back to Kane's first 6 months.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did come out and attack everyone. That's true.
So They kill Vader and Bradshaw. It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
I just didn't really understand what was going on.
I mean, it was just a continuation of Kane's career, really.
That's fine.
So they kill Vader and Bradshaw, which stopped us from having to do more of it, which was fine. Which then takes us into DOA versus the Headbangers. The DOA.
I mean, talk about matches that Kane and Mankind could have interrupted so that there wasn't more of them.
But DOA do have Paul Ellering.
In a glorious shirt, a pink shirt that says, who's gonna beat us? But he's wearing suspenders, so it looks like who's gonna eat us? And that made me laugh.
That's Paul Ellering for you. Paul Ellering joins JR and King commentary to reveal that he's here to write the final chapter of the Legion of Doom while we watch one of the most boring matches I've ever seen.
This whole book thing is just really consistent for him then. Also, the Headbangers poured hot candle wax on themselves for reasons came out.
Jerry Lawler called it hot candle wax. I'm not too sure if it was hot candle wax, but that's what it was called.
I just don't know what it was and why.
I mean, it's the Headbangers.
True, and I do love them. I really do.
And it's a man who has a t-shirt saying, can you eat us? Like, see, when I get hungry, the last thing I want to do is eat Paul Ellering.
He wouldn't be my first choice.
And I mean that in every possible sense.
Yes. I mean, he might recite some poetry to you in the process.
The DOA prevent the stage dive. They give Mosh this double team slam thing, which looked like so crap, but somehow got a victory. Like, I was amazed
terrible.
That this pinned if this pins you, Mosh, you don't deserve to be a headbanger.
Go back to being a sister of love, mate.
I feel like in a mosh pit, you would be more, you know, given worse stuff to do than this.
Probably, yeah. Can we just talk about Paul Ellering on commentary and some of the things that he says?
Please regale us, Sondra.
So they ask the obvious question, like, why did you turn on the Legion of Doom? Why are you with DOA? And Paul Ellering's like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out which way the wind is blowing. And he says something about the final chapter that you mentioned earlier, like it was the final chapter for the Legion of Doom. The Legion of Doom are prisoners of their own memories. All they remember is their glory years when they were the horse and he was the rider. And I was like, what even are you on about, Paul Ellering? I don't understand what's happening. The time for the Legion of Doom is gone. Like, it's a new era. It's the era of the computer. It's the era of the web. It's the era of DOA. And at
can you just kind of like, sometimes I'm slow in the uptake, Sondra. So it was the year of what?
There the was era three. So of the computer.
One. Okay, so there's the computer. Okay, what's
right.
Next?
So computers, obviously, on the rise in 1998.
Uh-huh.
The web, okay, as so in the World Wide Web, which you can access on a computer.
Okay, and then and then through that you access.
And it's also the era of DOA.
So in 1998, right, when Real Player is amidst everything, right, where you can load up 10-second clips, takes an hour.
Yeah.
Of all the things on the internet, porn, Pamela Anderson, Jocks and Cocks 4, whatever your thing is.
Sunny.
DOA is what you load up on a computer.
I don't know if you're meant to be loading up DOA on the computer or if they just represent the age of the computer for Paul Ellering.
How do they represent the age of the computer?
That's what I'm wondering. That's my question. I don't look at DOA and think, oh, of course, they're definitely representative of this new technological age.
Oh, the DOA. Oh, the World Wide Web. Cool.
What? How do you...
It doesn't make sense.
That's me going, oh, Sandra. Oh, suits and jackets.
Right.
How does Sandra fit in with suits and jackets? It doesn't make any sense.
I think it makes more sense because I have worn a suit before. Like, DOA, well, can you imagine DOA using a computer?
Well, to look up swastikas.
Exactly. It gets better, Kenny. Because as I'm completely baffled by this, he goes on, he starts saying things about, like, look at them. They have one face, but there are two of them, but... twins. I only have to program one mind. Like,
what?
That's not how
twins work.
Like, what even are you on about, Paul?
Dude, the best thing is he hasn't even got to his weirdest prediction yet.
I'm just so confused. Apparently, to Paul Ellering, in Paul Ellering's mind, because DOA are twins, that means he only has to, like, program once and get two people, so that's why they're representative of the new technological age of computers and the World Wide Web, because they have the same face. What?
Paul Ellering is sponsored by drugs. There's no other explanation whatsoever. All of the drugs.
Like, none of this makes any sense. Like, I'm into it.
Shocking.
Like, is Paul Ellering how Vince thinks computers work at this point?
I mean, I think that's how Vince McMahon thinks twins work at this point.
It could very well be. And Paul Ellering is like the personification of that Shawn Michaels picture when he was trying to be in the AOL chat room.
Probably.
I'm baffled. I'm absolutely baffled. But yes, DOA get a win over the Headbangers.
I do want to at this point just make note that the matches that happened at this taping for Shotgun Saturday night were Farouk and Scorpio defeating Too Much.
Why is Farouk and Scorpio together?
Reasons.
Okay.
Darren Drozdov beats Bombastic Bob.
Get excited.
Steve Blackman beats a jobber.
Sweet.
Edge manages to beat Jesus Castillo, who apparently remembered he was a wrestler this week.
So Edge was on Shotgun Saturday night and not on Raw.
And Dan Severn beats a jobber.
You know, every time you tell me these Shotgun Saturday night results, I think I have not wasted my time, or I am glad I haven't wasted my time filling another hour of my life with Shotgun Saturday night. I think Retro Raw's enough. I think that's going to suffice.
The Skittles Slam of the Week shows us that the war zone last week, Steve Austin regained his WWF Championship. But up next is D'Lo Brown with the chest protector and the Godfather by his side. The Godfather of the Nation, Sandra.
So I still don't really think that they've fleshed out what the Godfather is. Like, he still doesn't make any sense. Because I know what he becomes, but he's not that now. Like, they're just calling him the Godfather and he's dressed like a pimp. But, like, why? Like, he's just a guy who still is Kamel Mustafa in a hat. D'Lo Brown's great, though. I love D'Lo Brown's swagger when he walks out. His chest protector is a thing of glory. I think he has stepped up the chest protector game this week because it is shiny and pretty. It looks like he's put a little bit of care and sequins into the chest protector, which I appreciate. And it's also functional. And I think that it's just, I mean, the fact that D'Lo Brown uses a chest protector as a heel maneuver should be a sign to one Mr. Roman Reigns that maybe if you want to be a babyface, maybe you should just wrestle in a t-shirt instead.
D'Lo does go on to face Terry Funk. They have a couple of minutes where Terry Funk tries to... He tries
to murder himself, Kenny.
He gives D'Lo an acai moonsault.
Okay, so he gives D'Lo an acai moonsault. He just keeps moonsaulting into barricades every week. And then after he moonsaults into the barricade and, like, basically could have broken his legs because he just crashes down into that, he decides to do another moonsault where he basically lands on his shoulder. Like, his moonsaults are so out of control and crazy, and he just needs to stop, and this is all a terrible idea.
It's problematic for sure. It is problematic. But anyway, we're getting the match. We're going forward. Funk ends up punching the Godfather off the apron. Godfather ends up like wrapping up his necklace, his gold necklace, and punches Terry Funk in the back of the head. That KOs him, and then D'Lo does his lowdown finisher, picks up the win. But as D'Lo and the Godfather are about to celebrate, of course, the Undertaker comes out because he is not going to wait any longer to find out if he's the number one contender. So he then beats up D'Lo and the Godfather. And in a moment that probably shouldn't have made me laugh, but really did, is Terry Funk, right? We already say that Terry Funk is pretty stupid for always trying to moonsault.
Yeah.
But after watching wrestling for like 20 years and watching The Undertaker for the majority of 1998, he feels like The Undertaker is now his partner. He thinks that The Undertaker is there to have his back. So Terry Funk uses The Undertaker as a tree to climb. And then just keeps hitting him of like, cheers, mate. Terry Funk is like the drunk guy that falls over on a night out and then like thinks that you're there to help him. And The Undertaker gives him this look, which is the look that I think you get at the end of a relationship when someone decides they don't love you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills Terry Funk with a chokeslam.
I mean, obviously The Undertaker was going to also chokeslam Terry Funk because Undertaker's just out here to be a dick, apparently. Like, just like Kane and Mankind were out there to be dicks earlier, Undertaker's out here to be a dick. Again, like, him interfering here seems weird. I guess it's good because he's interfering with people that he normally doesn't interact with a lot, so I like that about it. JR is just raging about how Terry Funk can't defend himself. And I'm like, Terry Funk should not be wrestling.
My favorite thing was Terry Funk thought that The Undertaker was there to be his partner. Really? Really?
Terry Funk has had a lot of head damage.
I just think Terry,
well, that's what
smart.
I'm saying though. Like, no, you're right. You're absolutely correct. There is no reason that Terry Funk should have thought that The Undertaker was going to be his partner. Has he watched this program?
Apparently not. Apparently not.
Yeah. So, the one part that did make me laugh was when Terry Funk did his crazy, crazy moonsault in the ring and then landed on D'Lo's back. And they were like, that's the unprotected back of D'Lo Brown. This has to be it. Because if he lands on his chest, then he has the chest protector.
It was kind of glorious. It was lovely.
I love D'Lo and his chest protector, basically.
This takes us into the war zone, where Vince McMahon comes out to announce the new number one contender for the WWF Championship. He brings out Mankind, then he brings out Kane, then he brings out The Undertaker. He thanks Mankind for everything he's done here in the World Wrestling Federation, but is that enough to become the number one contender? He calls Kane one of the stupidest men he's ever seen in his life. Kane goes to attack him, and Vince says, but, you know, you did threaten to set yourself on fire, and that is worthy of being WWF Champion. I love what they're like. See what Vince thinks was worthy of being champion back then? Like, nobody should be champion now on this merit. Like, okay, so you're willing to fall off a cell. You're willing to set yourself on fire. What do people do today? They're slacking, Sandra, is what I'm saying.
They are slacking. They're definitely slacking. Vince's logic here is so very strange. Like, calling Kane the stupidest human being and then being like, well, you were willing to set yourself on fire, and I appreciate that. Like,
I love that Jim Ross was like, does Vince have a death wish?
Right.
So then he says to The Undertaker, he says, you know, and then there's you. And he calls him like the most evil guy in the world, and you know, he nearly took Mankind's life at Hell in a Cell. He was up for seeing his own brother get set on fire, but Vince knows that Undertaker wants to regain the title more than life itself, and that impresses him. But Vince can't decide, so he makes a triple threat match for the main event to determine who becomes the number one contender for the WWF Championship. Talk me through Vince's reasoning here, Sandra, and who you believe, based on Vince's reasoning, should be the number one contender.
I mean, like, I can't even with Vince's reasoning, right? Because I don't understand how he's like, you're so stupid for giving Stone Cold a title shot, but you're pretty smart for saying that you would set yourself on fire? Like, that's... Okay, Vince, all right. Apparently he finds that ballsy. He apparently thinks that Mankind falling off a cell had gumption or something. Like, I don't really remember what he said to Mankind. And he just keeps, like, talking about how evil The Undertaker is, but puts him in there for some reason anyway. And this was the longest way to announce a triple threat match in the history of Retro Raw, because, again, it was just like a really long Vince McMahon segment that I wasn't super keen on. It was good. Like, it wasn't terrible or anything, but it was just kind of like, right, I see where we're going here, but everybody had to get an entrance. And then this felt more like Today Raw than Retro Raw to me.
I think what's interesting about it is, and I totally took your point, I think it's valid. I think it works back then because we hadn't seen it 100 times. Yeah. And like here it kind of like, there is a purpose to all the stuff. But I think the problem is like, once we've watched like 15 years of this being done ineffectively, that when you go back and watch it maybe done in its early ilk of trying to be effective, it's hard to kind of take it seriously.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like it was terrible and it's not like anyone's performance was bad. I mean, it was just Vince McMahon talking. And, like, you get right away when it's like, oh, what an eclectic group. Like, obviously you're making a triple threat. Like, just get to it, you know? Like, why is this show 2 hours if this is what you're taking so long to do?
It worked for me, but I understand the trepidation about the long set. I think it worked for me more because the Vince character works more for me than the Stephanie one does. I think it's kind of like, you know, Vince's whole MO is like, I want the title off Austin. Who can get it off of Austin the quickest? Like, who, like, yeah, and that's constantly what's on his mind. So for me, that kind of like, it makes sense to me. And I also feel like, so even when Vince was like talking down to Kane, for example, right? Like, eventually he backs off from Kane, so Kane gets the kind of fire back. Mm-hmm. Whereas like sometimes I feel like when Stephanie does it, she just talks down and they're just like, They feel emasculated.
They just have to cower and take it. Because yeah, I kind of wanted Kane to just, like, chokeslam Vince.
Whereas I feel like at least with this, like, Vince had to back off. It's like, whoa, okay, wait. Although, you know, he had to... Although Vince does do the kind of Stephanie-esque stuff, he does eventually cower down a wee bit, mm-hmm. which is what makes it work a little bit more for me. But
because he's not a wrestler, and so he should be terrified of these giant men.
Yeah, and he doesn't take the whole, like, I am a woman... He doesn't have the whole, I am a woman, therefore I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the triple threat match for later on. We go back to the brawl for all though. It's Road Warrior Hawk versus Draws for no reason. What the fuck was that, Sandra?
I mean, why were they put against each other? They were pals and they don't really mention it. I think JR mentions it like once or twice on commentary. These guys are not like fighters. They're just not. And it didn't work at all. This is the worst idea for a tournament ever. I mean, when things got really interesting, in inverted commas, was when they both spit out their mouth guards. That was, like, the big spot of the match. Like, why? And then the match just ends in a draw? So what happens? Is it just, like, does the person who's supposed whoever, to get a bye?
Yeah, somebody gets a bye because of it, is what happens.
Right. Okay. So that happened. That was a thing that existed. I would have preferred at least if we got like a Hawk promo, but we didn't.
That's our extensive coverage of the brawl for all, ladies and gentlemen, here on Retro Raw.
I mean, how much can you really say about it? Like, Draws almost got a takedown at one point, but the clock ran out. Oh, the drama.
To be honest, like, when there's Jacqueline to talk about, I don't really need to spend more time on Brawl for All. Because out comes Jacqueline. The absolute sass that is Jacqueline. And it's funny because, like, for people who watched WWF/WWE, like, in the latter days of Jacqueline's career, she kind of wasn't anything. Like, she really wasn't part of the show. She wasn't anything that was, like, featured. And I forgot about the beginning of Sassy Jacqueline, where she basically would call Sable all the names under the sun. But that's back. So she comes out with Mark Mero, and she's going to break her silence. There's a huge Sable chant, of course. She takes full responsibility for Mark Mero's loss last week, because before... he faced Steve Blackman. They went 12 rounds the night before. Ayo! Sex.
Because sex. You know, it was their 2-month anniversary, and me and my man went 12 rounds the night before until his tank was empty. And that sets up a whole bunch of car and sex puns.
Mark Mero is glorious in the background here.
Mark Mero selling everything that these women say is the best part of this. Like, I detest everything about this segment except Mark Mero's facial expressions.
I thought this was great. I loved it. Jacqueline comes out. She's just like being completely sassy and bitchy. And she's like, you know, like Sable couldn't satisfy Mark Merrow. Sable wasn't able, which I think is maybe on record as the worst insult in Retro Raw 1998 so far. Potentially.
She says it twice because she fucks it up the first time.
I love a glorious fuck up of a person. And like, she's like, so then Sable comes out to respond because she, Jacqueline's calling Sable all the names under the sun, but she can't quite get it right. So Sable comes out. Sable's gear this week, what's the verdict?
Her gear this week, I liked last week's better, but it was pretty good.
Sable comes out and she says, you know,
I don't like her fluffy hair around the ponytail. I think it's better when it's like pulled back a little more. Like, I don't like the feathered hair thing that she has going on.
She seemed like a mum who had a son in college at this point. She comes out and she's like, you know, the real thing that happened was Mark Merrow couldn't get up. And, you know, I mean, with a voice like that, I can imagine.
But, I mean, I feel like you're really underselling all of the car sex puns, because Jacqueline's like, she looks real good, but there ain't no motor under that hood. And something about she couldn't get it in gear when Mark was ready to steer and all that stuff. And then Sable's
sex on
like,
them. Sex.
I always had my pedal to the metal, but Mark's tire was flat.
So
back then, they didn't make Viagra to keep his tank full. Back then, they were together months ago.
See, the thing is, right, you know, you love Brawl for All and its ridiculousness. This is the stuff I live for.
This is your Brawl for All.
Terrible, terrible back and forth insults. I live for them. Love it. So they basically are calling each other sluts, even though they both slept with the same guy, so it doesn't really make any sense. And Jackie says the only way to settle this is to challenge Sable to a bikini contest. And then Sable, for whatever reason, says, hey, Jackie, don't blow it. Show it. And I'm going to drop the bomb on you. And that is the end of the segment. God bless.
You also missed the point where Jacqueline says she's 100% woman and this body is prime real estate. And then Sable says, yeah, but how many times have you rented it out? And then Jacqueline calls Sable a skank.
I mean, it's just everything I want is the two of these women who are arguing over having sex with the same guy.
Like,
this is
the argument.
This is
so terrible. This is so terrible for so many reasons. The reason I liked Sable in the first place was because she was standing up for herself and being like on her own terms and all this kind of stuff. Like, and now obviously she and Mark Merrow are no longer together. And I don't understand how Sable is the slut here, but then she's also going back and like completely slut shaming Jacqueline for being in a consensual relationship with admittedly a scumbag of a man. But that's her prerogative, I suppose. Like, I don't understand how Jacqueline's like, I was better at having sex with Mark Merrow than Sable. And Sable's like, nope, I'm better at having sex with Mark Merrow than you, Jacqueline. But Mark Miro's not good at having sex with me. You know how we'll settle this? A bikini contest? How is that going to prove anything?
Well, I mean, how else would you solve it, Sandra?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it's a problem that needs solving. But
Well, you're one of these people, Sandra. You come at these things with all your, I don't like it, but no solution. No solution to the, unless you have a solution, I don't want to hear it.
Apparently, I just fail at the problem of who can have sex with Mark Merrow the best.
Well, I mean, who does? Tell me the answer. Has sex with him better?
I don't know. I don't know who has sex with him better. But, I mean,
I'll tell you what, though. I'll be tuning in to Fully Loaded in Your House to find out, because apparently I'm going to find out.
Via bikini contest.
Bikinis will tell me who can have sex with him better. That's. I mean, I can't think of any better way to find out.
I hate this. I hate it so much.
So good.
It's so frustrating. Like, if Sable and Jacqueline want to have a rivalry, fine. But, like, a bikini contest just to be, like, completely exploitative, like...
But the thing is,
this is so Vince Russo. This is so Vince Russo, and it drives me insane.
Is it exploitative if they both want to do it?
I mean, I guess not if they both want to do it, but I don't appreciate them trying to, like, slut-shame each other because they both had sex with one man.
I also love the idea, like they had sex with one man. They had sex with Mark Merrow.
Right?
Mark Merrow and Sable
comes out and, like, him taking great offense to her flat tire comment. Like, I said, his reactions about this are great. Jacqueline is terrible at speaking. Sable is terrible at speaking. Do I want to see the two of them have a war of words? No, I sure don't. Do I want to see them have a war of words where they slut shame each other and basically, like, the prize is this man who's an absolute scumbag? Especially no. I really don't.
My favorite thing is, like, Mark Meadows, who you fight over, the best thing ever. So good.
Right?
But don't worry, Sandra. I know that you're thinking, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about women exposing themselves for a man. So don't worry, Sandra. We're going to move on to something better. So we get the Kaboom Box Kaboom of the Week, which was obviously Hell in a Cell. But don't worry. Here to save us is Dustin Runnels. And he's going to take on Val Venus, who made a move last week on Mrs. Yamaguchi-san. Because she apparently...
As the baby face, because it's cool to thrust your penis in someone's face non-consensually, and that's a good guy move.
She apparently likes Val's sausage.
She doesn't! She did not look happy about it at all!
So we have the match of Dustin Runnels and Val Venus. Val no-sells an inverted atomic drop, and then they have the most boring match in the history of the world, which only lasted 2 minutes and 38 seconds, but felt like about 5 times that amount. And as Val Venus stands over Dustin Runnels and gyrates, Yamaguchi-san and his lovely wife get Kaintai to attack Val Venus. Once he's beaten down, Yamaguchi-san tries to cut a promo and slaps Val Venus and then tries to do Val Venus's gyrate.
This was amazing. Like,
and then,
okay,
they,
so
and,
I...
then, and then they leave as, here's my favorite part of it. So apparently Yamaguchi-san's wife is, by what I'm judging in commentary, okay, what she's supposed to be emoting here is that she feels conflicted because she kind of fancies Val Venus, but she's married to Yamaguchi-san. That is not what she conveyed in any way.
No, not at all.
So to me, like, I feel like she came in, they were like, hey, Mrs. Yamaguchi-san, we need you to, like, emote and do this thing. Hey, Sable, can you just show her how to do it? That's what happened.
Exactly. Exactly. She definitely went to the Sable School of Acting. Although she does, like... She does sort of move her face a little more than Sable tends to, but not in the right ways. I mean, this is like really early Sasha Banks in NXT acting job, right? Like, it is terrible. So I still hate Dustin Runnels a lot. And Dustin Runnels versus Val Venus is not what I wanted to see. But I mean, at least I guess that didn't last super long. I don't understand, like, Dustin's supposed to have accepted Jesus and be so happy, but like, he looks sadder than he ever has. Like, I swear he looked happier when he was the artist formerly known as Goldust with FU painted on his face.
I think I did some investigative journalism, and what happened was when Dustin Runnels, before Jesus, he was able to take cocaine and stay up till 4 in the morning. But the thing is, once you convert to Christianity, you need to be at church at like 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. You can't really be out all night, so you need to go to bed by like 11.
I mean, church for us was like 9:30. It was super early.
So basically, he was losing all his late nights. He couldn't drink anymore. You definitely couldn't take a line of cocaine off someone's buttocks anymore. So the thing is, sometimes conversion is not the happy thing at first.
And I think it's just really not helping his fashion sense either, because the white knee pads on the outside of denim jeans, not a great look for him.
It's a problem. I want to give Dustin Runnels a hug.
I just feel bad. I just want to be like, honey, no. Yeah, so Mrs. Yamaguchi-san cannot emote at all, like, not properly. Yamaguchi-san's promo after this was amazing. He says that Val Venus is just a half man Yamaguchi-san is.
That is word for word.
That is word for word. Just a half man Yamaguchi-san is. He then says, no more hello babies, ladies.
No more hello babies!
And then when he mocks Val Venus's gyration, he looks like he has been, I don't know, shocked with a taser or something. Why is Yamaguchi-san there if he can't cut promos or anything?
Who cares? This is a glorious gift that we got in between Mr. Christianity and the porn star.
That's true. I shouldn't complain about it, because this was incredible. Like, Yamaguchi-san, I want more promos from him.
You're going to get them. Don't you worry.
Oh, good. Excellent. I'm glad. So I was like, briefly, because I was super annoyed when it was Dustin Runnels versus Val Venus, and I was briefly amused because Yamaguchi-san was so terrible. And then just go on. What happens next, Kenny?
This is one of my favorite things ever. So then we've been
I hate this episode. I hate it with all of my being.
I love it so much.
I know you do.
We've been told that DX All Night have been in hiding. We don't know what's going to happen. So DX come out dressed.
They should have stayed there.
To some people, dressed as the Nation of Domination. Triple H plays The Rock. He's got an IC taped over his European title. Tremendous. Road Dogg plays B-Lo. Okay. Billy Gunn is The Godfather. X-Pac is Mizark Henry. Jason Sensation is Owen Hart. And China is herself. Because she will not dare to dress up.
Because China cannot be bothered and also does not think blackface is a good idea, potentially. You know.
So, I mean.
Because it's fucking not.
So, basically, the gist of it is Triple H does impressions of The Rock. Jason Sensation does some brilliant.
Jason Sensation? I meant to ask you who this Owen Hart man was, because he was the best one.
He was like a Canadian wrestling fan who was like on TV in the build-up to Canadian Stampede, like in the crowd and stuff, and they knew he could do an impression, so they brought him in to do this. So he was by far the best.
Because he actually did sound quite like Owen Hart.
Alarmingly so. He did a great impression of Owen Hart. Road Dogg does a bit of D-Lo, but it's basically just
him. And Owen does look kind of like a road sign, so he wasn't wrong there either.
That's true. Road Dogg does a lot of the D-Lo jaw jacking with the chest protector on. X-Pac's impression is pretty racist, so I'm going to move past that. And
it's pretty racist, you say?
What else
pretty
what racist? Say? It's racist.
It's 100% super fucking racist, just like this entire segment.
I think
as Mizark Henry was the worst for sure.
I don't think it's entirely racist. Like half of it is racist. Like Owen Hart's not racist. Triple H isn't racist. The Billy Gunn, I'd say, is borderline. Like
I'd say anyone in blackface is pretty racist.
I think that the Road Dogg one and the X-Pac one, 100%. I would argue in the other ones. I just don't think the other ones are. But those two, 100% are.
I feel like Triple H could have done this without, like, darkening his skin, and it would have been, I mean, it still wouldn't have been funny because the material's crap, but...
To you.
I mean, literally, he's making poop jokes.
The thing is, I don't think you're ever going to like this.
No, I won't.
I 100% accept some of the pitfalls of it, but I still think it is funny in some ways, and I think a lot of people do. You know, that's what it still is talked about to this day, so there is some humor in it. But I think what I learned from watching it back, this is just my opinion, is that it is funnier in clip form than a full segment, because yes. The main funny part is the Owen Hart bit. And the other bits I think are funny enough as like a small clip thing that you see 10 seconds of. But when you see the whole thing, you're like, oh, this is so much better just as a clip.
Because it just kept going on. And like the only part that I thought that was a little bit funny that Triple H did, I thought him doing the eyebrow thing to imitate The Rock was like, I'm trying to point out some sort of positive in the cesspool of a segment. Him doing the eyebrow thing was kind of funny a little, because it was just like, you know, he's mugging for the camera and that was fine. And then where he takes off the elbow pad and is going to do the people's elbow on, I think on B-Lo. And then he just stops and like grabs the microphone and starts doing The Rock's mannerisms again. I was like, okay, that timing was pretty good, I guess. But like mostly, okay, so take the horrendous, horrendous, horrendous blackface out of it. Like I'm trying to separate that from the material of the segment. Most of the material just wasn't funny to me either. Like it was standard DX shtick and I just didn't like it. It was like, I mean, nothing that Triple H was saying after he did the eyebrow stuff, once he opened his mouth and started just making like poop jokes, I was just like, okay, this is stupid. It's just going on. Like I said, I thought the guy playing Owen Hart was actually kind of funny, but I just don't understand the point of this segment either, because like I don't really know what it accomplished other than DX or dicks who are mocking the Nation for reasons, I guess. But I think one of the reasons the segment also doesn't work is that the Nation just aren't that well defined as characters, because like Mark Henry is big, basically. So X-Pac is just like big and black and super racist. Like D'Lo Brown, he's starting to get a little bit of a character with the chest protector, so at least they could mock the chest protector thing with him and like the whole head shaking. But, like, with The Godfather, like, what even is he? We don't know what he is. Like, we don't really know what Mark Henry is. Like, even, you know, we know who The Rock is, I guess. But I don't think the Nation are well-defined enough as characters to even mock them at this point.
That's a fair point. I think some of it was funny, some of it wasn't. I think it's better in clip form. I think the it's one of those things we kind of go, was black facing in 1990 acceptable? When I was a kid, it didn't occur to me, if I'm honest. Like, I wasn't like, oh my God. But then I was a kid and I wasn't really thinking about it. But it definitely does not hold up well. And I think even if you were to ask Sean Waltman today, he probably wouldn't do it again.
Probably
like,
not.
He'd be like, okay, that was too far. I think there was some funny parts to it, but definitely it's more of a clip form thing than a long form thing. But China for me was the best part because she was there, but like not participating.
Because she just can't be bothered with any of this nonsense. And I know that I have heard guys, like I've heard Mark Henry talk about this segment before and say that he really wasn't that upset by it. And that's like, that's fine. And that's good. And like, The Godfather 2 has said, like, no, that didn't really upset them because that's just part of the job, I guess. But, like, I really, really hated it a lot.
So we move on from there to Ken Shamrock versus King Mabel. Kill me now.
The gifts just keep on coming on this show, don't they?
Kill me now. But basically, Mabel tries to beat up Shamrock. We're trying to, like, sell that Mabel's a threat. And then as Mabel goes up top for whatever reason, Shamrock ends up getting his arm, turn it into an ankle lock, tap out 2 minutes in. Everybody's trying to pull Shamrock off Mabel, and Shamrock is just a monster and Mabel is laid to rest. I feel like Ken Shamrock was doing this for me and was killing King of the Ring 95, so I am more firmly in Ken Shamrock's side than I ever have been before.
And that's fair. Mabel makes Mark Henry look like a good wrestler. He really does.
That's the biggest burn you've ever given.
He's terrible. Like, he's really bad. It's impressive how bad he is. He just keeps yelling, "I'm the king." And like, okay, so if your issue is that you think you're the king, right? And you are upset that Ken Shamrock is the new King of the Ring and you are not the King of the Ring. It has taken you since 1995 to rectify this issue? Like, where were you for Stone Cold Steve Austin? Where were you for Triple H? Not that I'm saying we wanted Mabel around during all of that time, because oh boy, no. But I'm just saying it's just now occurred to King Mabel that he should be upset about someone else being King of the Ring 2 years later. 3 years later, I mean.
It's a problem. It is a problem.
Where has Mabel been?
Would you have sex with Mabel?
No.
Why not?
I feel like I would suffocate. Whether I'm on top or not.
I mean, that's a fat joke. That's offensive. That's, you know, you wouldn't find me making a joke like that.
sure.
Okay, main event.
Also, did you see how little he can move?
Isn't that to your advantage? You can control the pace. Main event time. Undertaker, Mankind, and Kane triple threat match for the WWF Championship. Vince McMahon comes out first. He joins JR and King. McMahon's kind of goading JR, like, isn't it great to have me here? And then as they go to start, Steve Austin comes out. Austin and McMahon are kind of jawjacking at the announce table.
So I will say it did make me laugh when Vince McMahon came out after the Ken Shamrock match. And like Ken Shamrock like continues just like beating up Mabel, right? And then Vince McMahon and Paul Bearer come out and he gives Ken Shamrock just like a huge thumbs up.
It's so like, good. And then he was like,
good job, son.
And then to Mabel, he's like, oh, damn, you know, you tried.
Yeah, exactly. And then Sergeant Slaughter salutes Vince McMahon because, of course, he does. Like, I don't know.
What else are you going to do? You have to salute Vince.
Apparently.
So we end up only getting Mankind and Kane, and Undertaker doesn't show up. Vince is like, you know, what's going to happen? Mankind says he's not going to fight his friend Kane. And then Vince calls for the bell anyway, and then Kane goes outside of the ring, he grabs a chair. Vince wants Kane to hit Austin, but instead he smacks Mankind in the head, rolls him out of the ring, and slowly pins Mankind for the win. Vince is going crazy, like, yes, Kane's the number one contender, and as Kane takes his mask off, it is in fact The Undertaker, dressed as Kane. It is not Kane, it is The Undertaker. Austin looks very, very shocked. Fair to say, I guess. He's very, very shocked at the whole situation. And then Raw goes off the air in probably the quickest fashion I've ever seen.
It was like The Undertaker takes the mask off and it's just done. Like,
there is 4 seconds of air.
Yeah, like, there's not enough time to process any of this. I mean, it did, I will admit, I wasn't the hugest fan of Vince on this show, and I don't like him being so over-involved in everything, but it did make me laugh when he got in the ring and told Tony Chimmel to say, because the Undertaker's music hits twice, and Chimmel announces him, he doesn't come out, right? And he's like, due to the fact that the Undertaker is not here because he is a chicken shit, Kane and Mankind will fight one-on-one. Vince McMahon had the ring announcer call The Undertaker a chicken shit. Like, does he have a death wish? Because as we find out later, Vince does not actually know where The Undertaker is. Like, Vince thinks that maybe he is... Did Vince, like, kidnap The Undertaker, but then The Undertaker switched places with Kane? Is that what happened? Like, what sort of Scooby-Doo shenanigans are going on here?
There are so many questions.
I have so many questions. And, like, poor Mankind. I'm just like, why are you even here, first of all? Like, you are severely concussed. So, of course, the best thing to do to someone who is severely concussed is to hit them in the head with a chair.
Let me ask you. When I was younger, I had no idea it was Undertaker at the time, because I was younger. Did you know straight away that it was him?
No, I didn't. I mean, I wasn't paying, like, the most attention to it either. But it was dark, and no, I didn't.
Were you shocked when it was him?
Yeah, kind of. I was just like, wait, what? Because I was like, I probably should have seen this coming. Like, I was also taking notes and, you know, doing a couple other things. So I wasn't paying, like, the most attention to, like, looking at the TV screen. But it did seem like Kane was taking a while to do things. So I really should have caught on. Like, I actually was like, oh, it was the Undertaker dressed as Kane all along. And that's why he was so slow about everything. That makes sense.
So there you go. Undertaker's the number one contender. Okay, Sandra, I'm guessing the thumb is down for this one.
Oh, it's such a thumbs down. I hated this episode.
I loved it. It was so good. Such a thumbs up. Such a thumbs up. It was the best. It was so quick. There was a part, it gave me the King of the Ring 95 nail in the coffin that I needed. Undertaker was dressed as Kane. Vince McMahon was screaming at people. We had an Owen Hart impersonator. Sable and Jacqueline were trading jibes over having sex with Mark Merrow. And Undertaker and Kane beat up people, and Paul Ellering wanted people to eat him. So really, I mean, I can't really ask for more.
Paul Ellering was pretty glorious. I am completely baffled. Like, I can't even wrap my head around what Paul Ellering, what happens in his mind. Because if he thinks that's how programming and twins work, like, I just don't even know. The whole thing is baffling. All of it's baffling. I just kept going, why? Like, why is any of this happening as I was watching this episode? And then it just kept getting progressively worse and worse and worse. So, and it picked up a little toward the end, I guess. But I was just like, where's the Undertaker? Why is he not here? Now I want to know where Kane was.
It just shows you sometimes people can watch two different shows.
Yeah, we really, really can.
Social media, Sandra, where can people get you if they want to say hi?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And for bonus content, if you want to hear us talk about King of the Ring 98, which I thought was a pretty interesting discussion, go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for that. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for all sorts of interviews. Triple H, Daniel Bryan, JR, James Storm. Lots of people there talking on our YouTube channel. Also go to insidetheropes.co.uk/edge for tickets for an evening. What's it called again? Afternoon with Adam Copeland. Okay. The tour plugs are always my difficult ones because I don't know all the details. But if you want to spend an afternoon with Adam Copeland like I wish I could, then you should go to insidetheropes.co.uk/edge because I'm sure those shows are going to be great.
And also, let us know what you thought of this show. I'm curious. Would this show be a thumbs up or thumbs down for you, or thumbs in the middle? Tweet us both and let us know. I'm curious to see, am I just in a bubble of nostalgia? Is Sandra just in a bubble of not wanting racism? Like, what's happening?
Of not wanting racism. I love how that's...
I'm trying to make a lighthearted thing of it. So let us know what you think. Like, I don't want racism.
I'm happy to be in my bubble of not wanting racism.
I don't want racism. Shut up, Sandra. Let us know what you think, and we'll go from there. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.